Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the companion podcast for DDNet. I'm Matt Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief at Digitally Downloaded, and with me this week, we have two people. We have Tyler. Hello, Tyler.
I'm back again by popular demand. Totally not a last-second replacement or anything. This has been booked for well over a week, so happy to be here.
Good to have you, and thank you for being that last second replacement. You saved our lives. and we also have with us this week, Harvard. Hello, Harvard.
Hi, good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Okay, so we got plenty to talk about this week, and we promise we won't spend too much time wasting your time talking about Destiny. We'll talk about other stuff as well, we promise. But yeah, we'll have a bit of music first and then get stuck right into it.
Nalini
And welcome back, everybody. That was Gigantic Girl, which is apparently Tyler's favorite Hatsune Miku song, which is just shows what great taste he has in Miku music. So this week, to kick things off, we thought we'd talk about tactics RPGs, because there has been an awful lot of them that have released in a short span of time. This week we have Utawara Rumono, and I think that's about the closest I'm ever going to get to pronouncing that correctly, which is a visual novel slash tactics RPG from Aqua Plus, being published in the West by Atlas, and my review of that will be up probably by the time you listen to this podcast, actually. We've also had Disgaea 5 come out on the Nintendo Switch last week, and it was great. That's a game that really works in the portable format, I feel. And then late that week, there was also Fire Emblem Echoes, which was released on the Nintendo 3DS, one of the last 3DS games that we can probably expect from Nintendo itself before it shifts over to Switch production in full. And it was pretty darn good too. So yeah, I mean, tactics RPGs, Harvard, I know you're not the world's biggest fan of them.
What yeah. are your issues with them? I can tolerate them if everything else about it is good. So if the story is really good, if the music is really good, then I kind of don't mind the strategy part of it, but yeah, most strategy games I've played, I've hit a wall and I've just stopped getting motivated because the battles take a really long time, and really planning your party, I feel, is very detached from the rest of the narrative that the game's trying to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that a bit offline, but yeah, there's certainly a case, I guess, you can make that a lot of tactics RPGs don't actually need the tactical RPG gameplay bit to work, and would almost work better, I guess, as more traditional RPGs in terms of the way that they play. But yeah, I mean, I can see where you're kind of coming from, I guess, that these games are traditionally fairly difficult as well, which certainly means that a lot of people hit walls with them and don't feel compelled to continue on with them. But yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what do you think about them, Tyler? I mean, are you a fan of the genre as a whole?
Yeah, I'm a fan as a whole. I think Harvard brings up some really good points there about, you know, maybe it not gelling with the narrative. But the one thing that I really like about it is you get that sort of like traditional RPG elements, but you're also getting, you know, that layer strategy. And that's what really brings me into it. Some of my favorite strategy RPGs. I really like the Awakening, Fire Emblem Awakening, mainly because of the kind of like they didn't really dumb it down, but they added those options to make the game easier, which I really like. I'm not a big permadeath guy. That stresses me out too much, and I understand why people like are into that, but when you start like save scrubbing, it kind of defeats the entire point of it. But like when I'm playing XCOM, though, I end up save scrubbing a ton, which is kind of unfortunate, but it happens. But yeah, I like having that extra stress of the strategy and moving around the tactical map. I really enjoy that. Probably my favorite is Disgaea 5, and then I really liked Devil Summoner on the DS for Shin Megami Tensei. I thought that was a really great game.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's funny, that one, I know it was a tactics RPG.
But then the combat's more like a traditional one, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it never really felt like a tactics RPG to me. It's weird like that.
It's in a weird middle ground.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a couple of other ones that I felt similar to, like, for instance, Project X Zone, which I know is a tactics RPG through and through, but because it had those kind of real-time combat elements, so beat-em-up style combat elements to the battles, for whatever reason, I never kind of associate those games with tactics RPGs until someone mentions them, and then I'm like, oh, yeah. That's right.
Did you end up liking the Project Cross Zone games? Like, I like adore them in theory, but I don't know. I think it's something about the plot, but these characters would talk for like 5 hours before getting to a point each chapter, and I just I got bored at a point.
Sorry, which games were those?
Project Quantum. So the Sega Namco and
The Project X Zones.
Yeah.
I played them. I'm not the world's biggest fan of them simply because I felt that they didn't really do the characters justice. They kind of threw all the characters in there for, you know, fan service purposes or whatever, but never really did anything with them, and they weren't really true to, I guess, the characters from, you know, their personas in their respective games. So, like, you have Yakuza characters in there, and they're only kind of, you know, they're in name only. They don't behave like Yakuza characters. So, yeah, I found the character writing in those games a bit off, which kind of put me off them. Which is kind of, I guess, segues into my the reason I like tactics RPGs, and it's because of that character thing. I like, because of the format of the tactics RPG, because you can have so many more characters fighting in a battle at once than a traditional RPG where you're kind of locked to three or four. There's a greater sense of character that comes through. So to give Fire Emblem's a good example, I'll have, you know, 10, 15 favorite characters out there on the battlefield at once. And there's an intensity to the characterization, which I find really appealing when it's done well. But otherwise, the strategy of tactics RPGs is fun, but it's not, as somebody who likes to play much more hardcore strategy games, obviously tactics RPGs are fairly simple in terms of the strategy that they put forward. And so for me, it's all about the characters with those games. If a game has good characterization, then I'll like it. If it doesn't, then I'll probably pass on it, regardless of how well the tactics itself work. And I guess for that reason, I like the visual novel crosses with tactics RPGs a lot. So on the PS3, there was Tears to Tiara 2, which was localized. And then Utawara Rumono, which is coming out this week, is from the same developer. And I really like that mix where you've got about an hour of reading visual novels between each kind of battle scene. That really works for me.
Oh, sorry, excuse me.
Some technical issues. So have you played any of those visual novel tactics crosses, Tyler?
Not really. Like, probably the closest I've come to are the Namco Sega crossover games, since there's so much dialogue constantly happening there. But I haven't played the one you mentioned there. That does seem like it would work, as long as there's not too many battles, probably. Like you wouldn't want it to go on for, like, I don't know, 20 plus hours. But that seems like mixing up the action. I feel like fighting games have done that a lot, where you'll have like Blaze Blue has like the visual novel bits, and then you fight, and that works really well. So like, kind of blending visual novels with other genres generally turns out well.
Yeah, absolutely. Blaze Blue is a good one. But you've got to go through like 3 hours of conversations just for a 30-second battle. It's pretty funny. and then Guilty Gear gets rid of the battle at all. It's just
one
long
visual. It's like a 3-hour movie, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, I really recommend that you have a look at Utawara Rumono. And I'm sick of saying that now because, I'm pretty sure. And upsetting people who can speak Japanese with much less accent and more clarity than I can. But anyway, I really...
Can you say the title one more time? I'm trying to Google it here.
Utawara Rumono. I'll spell it out for you. Utawarerumono.
See, the good thing is on Google, you just got to type like UTAWA, and then it has the whole rest of it already typed out for you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that game was originally an adult visual novel in Japan. So with all of the that it entails. But when they decided to bring it to console, obviously they had to get rid of the R-rated stuff.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Somebody get censored gaming on the call here.
Yeah. So that,
they removed all the vagina bones, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. They did do that. No, it's still pretty fan servicey, because it does have that heritage in being an adult VN. But this is it's not censored. It's actually a rebuild of the game to be more appropriate for console, I guess. And it's surprising because you wouldn't expect the kind of the depth of narrative or storytelling from that game. Based on its heritage, but yeah, it's got a really good story. It's got really nice characters. It's got really gorgeous art. Really, really gorgeous art. It's actually based.
You know, when I think of like great narratives in media, I go straight to the best anime of all time, Boku no Pico. You've got the very the depth of everything. It really goes deep inside you, penetrates the heart.
Please, for the sake of everybody listening, don't Google that.
Yeah, definitely do not Google that. We do not condone everything that Tyler just said.
Yes, we don't. We're going to have so many angry emails now, Tyler, because you just recommended that, and people are now going to Google it, and they're going to blame us. It's all your fault.
They're going to send you lovely emails. They're going to say, thank you for showing me something I wouldn't normally find.
Yeah, let's start a petition to get a tactics RPG made based on that.
Yeah, there we go.
Section of our little podcast this week, we thought we'd talk about game length. That's an issue that's driving me a little bit crazy, because in the last week I ended up reviewing like 5 RPGs in 5 days, and I'm still recovering from that. And I know Matt, who's not on the podcast this week, but he has all kinds of issues about how long Persona 5 ended up taking him, as much as he enjoyed the game, other than the length. It drove him a little bit crazy because it just went on and on and on. I don't think it's actually possible to finish that game in under 100 hours. I don't know if anyone has. Game length. Obviously, games are slightly different media to other art forms, compared to film, for instance, which lasts for, you know, a couple of hours, or even a book, which, you know, has an awful lot more content in there for, you know, per minute worth of engagement with it. You know, theater is a couple of hours, concerts are a couple of hours, and so on. Games tend to be longer, and there is that also that expectation, I think, in the community that games offer, you know, hours that can be counted in the dozens, and it kind of becomes this selling point. And if a game doesn't offer, you know, an arbitrary kind of X number of hours, people start to look down on the game, criticize it for being too short or not have enough content. And it strikes me as a little bit odd that we do that, because in a lot of cases, games can get away with, or really probably should be, shorter in order to better convey their story, because a lot of them get bogged down in stuff that kind of starts to pull away on the themes, I feel.
I fully agree with you, Matt. I think it's a very difficult conversation. I don't think there's a correct answer for like a game length, but I think what we need to focus is on is when a game, like, when it leaves you satisfied. I think Persona 5 is an interesting case, because I feel like for the most part that game does earn its length, but like near the end there's a very bad, like, unenjoyable section where you have to go through like all of I'm trying to think what the dungeon is called.
Dementis?
You gotta go through basically 100 levels of the randomly generated stuff, and like, yeah, it serves no purpose other than the like just artificially lengthen a game that totally did not need to be longer. And you know, like, that's when that's where the game kind of jumps the shark there in terms of length, because otherwise I felt like the game's story kept like proceeding at a good pace and everything. But like, I see it way too often in games where they'll just, like, for some unexplainable reason, they'll just keep throwing you into like more scenarios. You go through like 8 different endings, and then you finally think, oh, the story's peaking, and then nope, there's another chapter after that. And it's really kind of demoralizing as a player. I don't think there's a perfect time for a game, but like, a lot of games are going too long. I think one of the ways to fix, like, because a lot of people do look at hours as a value proposition, I think, is to offer side content. You know, like, for example, like Yakuza 0. Like, if you just do the story in that game, that'll probably take you like 15, 20 hours tops. But then if you do want to do all the side stuff, and God, there's so much side stuff in that game. You know, I think I ended up spending like 80 hours in that game, if not 100. Like, I spent like a crazy amount of time with that game. So like, that value is there. But if somebody just wants to do the story, you know, it's perfectly fine that way. And I think that's where games need to kind of head in that direction. And I think shorter games are totally fine too. I really dig games that can be played in just one session. Like something like Gone Home or Abzu. I haven't played it yet, but I hear Edith Finch is really great in that regard. So, you know, those kind of games definitely have a place. But I get why people are hesitant to, like, purchase something like that. Although I hope that attitude kind of subsides, because I'd much rather have, like, 2-3 hours of, like, pure entertainment and be, like, really touched by the end than, like, have some 30-hour things where I'm bored halfway through and don't want to keep playing.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, people talk about, you know, getting value for money when they buy games. And fair enough, everybody doesn't want to waste money on stuff that they kind of get done with and never see again. But if you look at, you go to a music concert or whatever, you pay more money than you pay for a game. And those things are over fairly quickly, relatively speaking. So I always find it interesting that people have this expectation that games should offer, you know, dozens of hours of content, regardless of the quality of the content, otherwise it's not worth the money. I think that's looking at games probably in an unproductive way. What I find interesting with games is, like you say, Tyler, there isn't a kind of a set rule to how these things are designed and how long they are, which is interesting, because you look at, for instance, film, there's actual specific formulas about how film work, and they're meant to be, you know, between two and three hours in length and conform to a kind of three-act structure. And literature, you know, even though books are wildly variant length, They also have that same three-act structure, but with games, for some reason, those rules haven't been established yet, or people are still experimenting with how it can work best, and you don't have those same three-act structures. You don't have, you know, rough kind of time limits to work to. So I think a lot of developers, without those restrictions, struggle to control themselves. And yeah, if you look at RPGs, Caligula is not the longest RPG. It's only what you can get through it in, what, 20, 30 hours?
Yeah, 20 hours if you're really speedy. And then I've seen other people finish it in about 30, like, which doesn't seem like a huge, like, I like seeing games more than that. One of the RPGs I enjoyed playing was a indie game. It was a Saturday morning RPG, and that was like a 5 or 6 hour role-playing game. And it's not like a fantastic game or anything, but like that length and having it be that breezy was really refreshing, especially when you're a reviewer on Deadline. But like, I really enjoyed, like, I would like to see more games of that length, like a 10, 12 hours RPG. I think Cosmic Star Heroine, I know the developers there have talked more about like shorter, more tighter, compact RPGs. And I hope we see that, especially from the like digital field, because there's no reason to like have so much filler. And like, there are these people who all see like break down their purchases by like hours and how much money they're spending. And they're like, I only buy games if I can get an hour's entertainment for 20 cents or something. And it's just totally insane to me. Like, even when I didn't constantly have games to play, like I wasn't doing that much math when I was looking into my game purchases. You know, so hopefully we do kind of get like shorter games, because I do feel as a whole, like, they just go on too long. Like, a lot of, like, I can just bring up like a list of like games I've reviewed recently, and like a ton of them just keep on going. Like Akiba's Beat, like, oh my god, that game. There's like three different like natural ending points, and then it just kept on going. And then it was like, hey, why don't you go back to every dungeon you've been in before and beat some side bosses there? And it was just like one thing after another, and it's really tiresome at a point. And like Dragon Quest Heroes kept going on and on. Yeah. So it's nice to see, like, you know, I want to see those shorter games.
Yeah, I agree. And one that I always come back to is Ni No Kuni on the PS3, which I thought was, you know, absolutely brilliant game. And, you know, I was having the greatest time with it. And I get up to what I think is going to be the game's end boss. It's old enough now, I can give away spoilers. I don't know if you've played it, but
It's okay. I'll deal with it.
Sorry, I haven't?
No, I haven't played it, but I'll deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's there's a battle with a cloaked character on a ship.
And oh, no, I'm wrong.
That's not giving away too much. A cloaked character on a ship, and it feels like that should be the ending of the game. You beat it, and then you discover you've got to go and do, you know, a whole bunch more stuff afterwards. And it just starts to wear on my patience with the game then at that point, because, like you say, it starts to feel like filler. And I know people aren't the biggest fans. There's a lot of people out there that aren't the biggest fans of Compile Heart, but I like Compile Heart RPGs because they're always 15, 20 hours and they're done. And they tell the story that they want to in that time. And I think that's quite admirable. Another option I think that RPG developers might want to look at, if they really want to do those long stories, is episodic games, because I think breaking a game down into distinct acts, which are 3 to 4 hours in length, you end up with a game that can be, you know, over a couple of episodes, can be 15, 20 hours even in length, and doesn't feel like that for the player and is more manageable, I think. Because one of the things that I know holds a lot of people back from RPGs, from playing them, is this perception that they just don't have the time to actually sit down and commit to them, which is fair enough. A lot of people are busy, have jobs, families, all that kind of stuff. Sitting down to a 100-hour RPG can be really intimidating. If you were to break that down over the course of a year and release it in chunks, I think people would be more receptive to it, which I think...
Yeah, I think you make a great point there. Like, that's one thing I'm excited about, the Final Fantasy VII remake being broken into like an episodic manner, just because I don't know if I'd ever have the time to like devote it to like that game if it came out all at once. So if we get like these chunks, and I'm sure it'll be longer than like 4 hours, probably a third of that game still longer than like a majority of other games like that come out now. So like it'll still probably be 15-20 hours, but you know, like I can set aside that for a couple months, then you know, like a year later the next part comes out, or whenever they're gonna have that release schedule nailed out. But you know, I think that makes that type of time investment much more manageable, like you said. And while I'm not like the biggest fan of compile heart stuff, I think you do make a good point in terms of length. Like even though those games don't usually like click for me as much as I wanted to, like God, I just want the Hyper Dimension Neptunia games. I want them to be good so bad, because I'm sick of being yelled at by like people with their character avatars on Twitter. they always have damn Neptune as a Twitter avatar. But yeah, like their lengths are real good, and I get through those games, and like they're kind of like, I'm not sure if I'd say they're breezy playthroughs, but they're very manageable. They don't go on like exceedingly long or anything like that.
Can I just say as well, I feel like there's a big cultural aspect to it. Thinking back to Final Fantasy VII especially, from there on, RPGs felt really weird if you didn't do everything in them, and you didn't go to like a snow area and a volcano area and like a, I don't know, like do all these different things. Even stuff like
I'm sorry, I'm on Wikipedia, and apparently they announced the new Mega Dimension Neptunia update that adds VR to the game. So
did you miss that? It was the best.
I completely missed that.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I apologize to interrupt, but as soon as I said it, I could not. I had to make an audible noise there. I'm sorry. Please continue.
But I mean, Harvard, I think you've got a strong point there that you know, RPG developers feel like they have to do everything in every RPG, and yeah, you've got to go to this town, this style town. You've got to do a mountain level. You've got to do a cave level. You've got to do, you know, a forest level. All of that kind of stuff. I agree. That's something that RPG developers might that want to kind of cut down on the length of time of the games might want to look at. You don't actually need to do all of that every time for every
RPG. Yeah, and for all the crap that we give the Western development scene, I feel like the fact that they're tending towards a 12 to 20 hour experience is really working out well, because that's about the length of a TV show season, and it's more manageable than making as much as you possibly can in your development cycle and then ending up at 50 something hours and just telling the player, well, I guess you have to deal with it.
Yeah, I have my issues with open world games, but one of the things I do like about them is the way that they do give players the ability to vary the length of time that they spend in the game, if it's done well. It has to be done well, and it's not often done well. But if it is done well, like you can keep a game, an open world game, an open world RPG, to a fairly short length of time. And then if you want to then go and do all the side quests and stuff, like Yakuza 0 was a good example, but you know, other stuff like Witcher and Dragon Age and all of those games, people tend to spend a lot of time in them because they are massive games. But if you were just to focus on the narrative and just plow through the main storyline, they're not that long. And I think that's another good way to approach game length.
Yeah, that's a good point about just like as a reviewer, and I'm sure you can relate here, but like a lot of those like open world games, I'm like mainlining it. Like maybe I'll do like some side stuff if I think it's like particularly interesting. And you know, of course you want to try everything, a little bit of everything out, but like you beat those games sometimes in like crazy short periods compared to like you'll see people like post their playtime like a couple weeks after release, and you're like, oh my God, that took like 30 more hours than that I did. But like, you know, it's nice when that, like, there is that through line to the finish, for people that just want to kind of get through it. Like that, I think that's, like a really cool aspect. And, I'm hoping more games can kind of like offer something like that. Caligula is kind of like similar in that way, because, you know, it's pretty straightforward shot, but like, you have the social link aspect where, you're getting to see a lot more of the story. There's a bunch of optional like side quests and stuff. Like it's kind of cool in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I must admit, with Caligula, I didn't even bother with a lot of that side stuff because I found the main story to be, once you get past those opening chapters, the main story to be really compelling stuff. And yeah, it was, to me, that's actually a really good example of how RPG developers should go about it, because, you know, Caligula is one of the smartest games I've played in a very long time. It's got its issues of how it executes on that, but the actual ideas and the story and the density of it is really strong, and it's you can do that in 30 hours. So
yeah, this is why I like being on this podcast, because we're the only two people in the world that likes Caligula. Yeah, so it works.
Yeah, let me give you some more time on that, but until then I still say the game sucks.
Harvard.
It's just, oh, I can't deal. It's just too B grade for me. I can't,
I actually beat it up earlier today to finish off my last S-Link for the final characters.
Oh, nice. Well done. Congratulations.
It's a good game.
I really like it. I think, yeah, I'm someone who's right into the whole Hatsune Miku thing and the whole idea of...
Oh, yeah, there is that whole Vocaloid. That's a big part of the story. I should have figured you'd be more into that part. Yeah,
and the social kind of themes around it and the idea of constructed realities and, you know, what is real and all those kinds of questions. That's really interesting to me and has always been, and has been, you know, a subject that I've done a lot of study on. So to have a game that actually addresses all that stuff on a very serious level is really cool. Yeah. Against my protests, but everybody else insisted. There was a big trailer that was released last week. We all now know what Destiny 2 is going to look and feel like, and obviously that's going to get a lot of people excited and stuff. Not me, but a lot of other people. I can't state clearly enough how much I did not like Destiny. But anyway, Tyler, you saw the trailer and stuff. What did you think of Destiny 2?
Honestly, I was a little bit underwhelmed. here's a positive. I think I really like how Destiny plays, and it seems like they're not messing with that base. I feel like the gunplay is really solid in that game. And if there was, like, well, that game totally, like, shit the bed in terms of storytelling, which was like most of the lore you had to go on to, like, a website to read about, which is, like, so it's such an awful, like, way to present that, and shows how much of, like, a tacked on thing it was. But you know, the gunplay was so good in that game. I really enjoyed the combat loop, which kept me coming back. probably about every 6 months whenever they release an expansion. I wasn't one of those players that was playing on like a weekly basis, but I did really enjoy the gunplay. So with Destiny 2, they seem to not be changing too much in terms of that. They're adding some new abilities, which look kind of cool for the subclasses. But they seem to like know what worked from the first game, and they're not really changing much. It was kind of Injustice 2, I kind of had a similar issue with, where it felt so similar to the first game, and there wasn't like a mechanical difference. And while there's enough content to justify a sequel, like mechanically, it was like so similar that it could have like had been like DLC for like all that mattered. So it'll be interesting to see what else they have to show with Destiny 2. They did like show off a few like exciting like quality of life things though. They have a clan feature, which should have been in the first game. Like a lot of the stuff that they're addressing in all their updates in the past have been like stuff that should have been in the first game. So like having to pay $60 to get these quality of life improvements is a bit of a bummer when you think about it. But like the clan stuff should be fun. It really underlines like what a like kind of a failure the original game is when the on stage they said that their goal with Destiny 2 is to quote unhide the fun unquote. So like that's just like such a telling quote. It means that they like the way they surfaced like the good parts of that game, like the gameplay and stuff, was like so poorly done in that original. And like occasionally you'd find those nutty people that like didn't mind playing the same stages like 500 times and grind out like to get new guns and stuff, but like clearly that's not most people's user experience. So they want to surface that better, and hope, like God, I am praying on my knees right now that they manage to unhide the fun here, because I do think Destiny has a really solid base, and their storytelling was a bit improved in the Taken King expansion, and then it dropped right back down with Rise of Iron. So like hopefully they can get some like a story to make me care about that universe, because currently I don't give a single crap about it. But I am excited to play more of Destiny. I just hope everything around that they can flesh out better, and we'll see that. But yeah, I don't know. I was a bit underwhelmed. I kept waiting for like one big announcement, and I guess the big thing was that it was coming to PC. It's going to be part of Blizzard's Battle.net service, which is an interesting fit, just because you have all these like iconic franchises like World of Warcraft and all these great Bethesda worlds that are like super alive and have all these memorable characters in StarCraft and Diablo, and then you have generic ass Destiny right to the side. So it's going to be a bit strange when you're looking up your games list on Blizzard or on a Battle.net. So that just seems like a little bit of a strange fit thematically when you compare like Destiny to Overwatch. But like it makes sense that they would use that platform for more of their games.
I think the problem with Destiny, ultimately, there's a lot of problems with Destiny. I think the kind of the overriding problem, the problem that kind of informs every other problem that the game has, is that it was built to be the blockbuster. And it was made in such an utterly generic way because it needs to appeal to every single person on the planet, or that's it's trying to appeal to every single person on the planet and be everything to every person, that it has no identity, and it's just this big, gorgeous mess of nonsense that it doesn't appeal to anybody, I think. I don't want to say anybody. It doesn't appeal to me as a person who likes stuff that's creative and different. Destiny's kind of the exact opposite of creative and different. And I'm not surprised that Destiny 2 doesn't look like it's doing anything different to Destiny 1, other than the kind of the playing around with stuff on the edges and adding more content. The core of Destiny 2 was never going to be different to Destiny 1, because this is as formulaic as kind of games come.
I think you make a great point about how like it's designed, you know, like with the like a consumer like thing in mind and not like with a creative mind. And I think what we're seeing is that like people will accept something like that is like weird. And like, take a look at Yakuza for a second. Like, Yakuza Zero was clearly not like designed in mind with like clicking off a bunch of like checklists of like, this will appeal to the widest crowd. Like, they just went for whatever the hell they wanted to, and like, hey, let's have you go into like a nudie video place, and then you gotta watch Kiryu like moan after looking at some tissues. Like, they do, like, they go for every like weird thing they want in that game, and that has like shown to appeal to like a wider crowd than like a lot of people would have thought, because typically it was like this niche thing. But like, we're seeing that people are more accepting of that, and I think hopefully we'll see a trend for consumers to kind of shift to more of these creative works instead of these major games that are just like designed, you know, by committee practically. And it's really a shame because like Bungie has so many talented people working for them, and I'm sure that can't be like. I wonder how creatively fulfilling that is for them, you know, to, you know, be working like, and like same with the people on like Assassin's Creed and stuff, like just having, you know, the work year round on this game, and it doesn't really feel like yours. I think that's why we see so many people like going off into the indie space and leaving AAA.
Well, you look
at, but you know, it is interesting.
I mean, to take your point, I mean, you look at what Ubisoft does, and yeah, you know, they've got their teams working on stuff like Assassin's Creed and absolute crap like Ghost Recon.
Hey man, get hyped for the Crew 2, Crews in USA.
But I mean, you look at what they do, and they also let their teams do stuff like you know, Child of Light and
Eagle Flight. Yeah.
Which are, you know, very personal games for the teams that were working on those. And you know, the Ubisoft obviously understands that games are a creative medium, and that games designers are artists and want to be artists, and they give their teams the ability to do those kinds of small games, is at the same time that they're working on a commercial reality that as a very big company they need something like Assassin's Creed to make money, otherwise they're not going to be around much longer. But when I look at Activision,
Matt, I think they're coming for your Hatsune Miku doll.
Oh, sorry, that was cops in my area.
Oh, it was Harvard.
It was all Harvard. It was all Harvard. He's done
something. No cops in the world. That's around.
He's done something naughty, and they've come to take him away. but yeah, I mean, you look at Activision, and I feel sorry for the guys at Bungie, because they were the ones that created Halo, and Halo is, well, a blockbuster, certainly had a lot more artistic credibility, especially the earlier ones, than Destiny does. And yeah, like you say, I would struggle working in that kind of environment myself if I was a game developer. So yeah.
Can I just give a counterpoint, now that the cops are off my back? It's really admirable how proficient Destiny is as a game sometimes. And I think there's a lot of consumers that would want that. I think I remember when No Man's Sky came out, like, everybody was angry that it wasn't just Destiny 2. It was like this creative thing that no one asked for. So I think that if you're just going to play something where you shoot stuff and you just want it to be proficient enough that you can enjoy it, I think Destiny fills this really big niche, maybe like a majority even, and I'm very much okay with that existing, because it needs to, like, as a commercial entity, like, it does what it does really well, and I'm sure there's a lot of developers who are proud of how proficient they can get a game like Destiny if the corporate heads over there are only concerned about how much money it makes.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great point, Harvard, and I completely agree with you. I think that Destiny is a very well-made game. I think my dislike of it sometimes makes people think that I don't think that these games are well made, but I think that Destiny is a remarkably well made game. I think that Call of Duty is a remarkably well made game. I think that Battlefield even. They're all very, very well made games, and the reason that they sell so well is because they are well made games. So that's certainly, there's nothing wrong with a company designed to go after money. And you look at film, and films are the same. The Avenger films are of limited, the Marvel films in general are of limited, I guess, artistic value, but they're, you know, mega, mega, mega blockbusters. They're basically sustaining Hollywood at the moment. And then somebody comes along and tries to do something a little bit more creative, as I will forever argue that the DC films do. They try and be a little bit more artistic as such, mostly because what's his name, the director of most of them, Zack Snyder is an artistic director working with big budgets, and he creates stuff that ends up polarizing everybody, and everybody hates him for it. And you just look at that kind of difference between the DC and the Marvel films, and you can see parallels in the films and in the games industry, where you've got stuff like Destiny and Call of Duty and all of that, and those things generally go down very well with consumers and audiences and critics for being blockbusters. And then, you know, more creative stuff tends to get a little bit more criticism because, you know, one of the things about being creative is that some people are not going to like what you do, and you've got to be willing to accept that. If you're directing, say, a Yakuza game, you've got to be willing to accept that some people are not going to like the tissues and the video booth side quests and mini games, and that will affect, you know, some people's response to the game. That, you know, Destiny doesn't have that kind of those kinds of bits that people will actively dislike, because it's made to appeal to just about everyone on some level.